I am concerned that I'm not hearing enough from the Republican leadership, and very concerned about what I'm hearing from some of the Democratic leadership on stepping back from reform and excellence and progress.
Welcome to Reality Check, a weekly podcast about anything and everything having to do with education. I'm Jeannie Allen, founder and CEO of the Center for Education Reform. We chose the name Reality Check because a lot of what you read about education these days is often wrong or misleading. If you want to know what's really going on in American education, from K through career, you're going to need a reality check. My guest today on Reality Check is former United States Senator Mary Landrieu. Senator Landrieu was first elected to the Senate from her home state of Louisiana, or should I say Louisiana? I can't quite say that, in 1997 and served in that position until 2015. During her tenure, she became one of the Senate's most outspoken supporters of education innovation and charter schools. We know this firsthand because we oftentimes knocked on her door looking for allies when we were trying to convince the Congress to do great things, which, thanks to her, we did. In 2004, when Senator Landrieu's hometown of New Orleans was devastated by Hurricane Katrina, charter schools, as many of you know out there, played a key role in the rebuilding of the city. The state-run Recovery School District took over dozens of the city's schools after Katrina, and as Senator Landrieu recently pointed out in an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, since 2004, New Orleans schools have seen a 35% increase in graduation rates. To talk about that, her general feelings about education, the state of public affairs in the country, and charter schools, I am so pleased to welcome Senator Landrieu.
Thank you, Jeannie. I'm really happy to be here. It's one of my favorite subjects to talk about, and appreciate your advocacy for excellence for all of our children for many years. So thank you for having me.
Well, I am just so delighted you're here for lots of reasons, as I've just enumerated, but also because without great national spokespeople like yourself, these issues to help kids of all stripes will never really advance in the public realm. So let me just start by asking you, what do you think of the context and the state of education and innovation and where it's playing a role in political affairs?
Well, unfortunately, I think after a 20-year run, and what I mean by a run are presidents like President George Bush, President Bill Clinton, President Barack Obama, in a bipartisan fashion, really pushing from Washington the concept that every child deserves an excellent opportunity for education. And those presidents pushing a broad coalition of Republican and Democrats to forge consensus about how to achieve that, which would include holding schools accountable for the results, giving schools space to find their way, but having tests that really measure, you know, a child's performance and advancement. A lot of that has weakened. So you've seen a real stepping back. This president doesn't seem to be focused much on anything because focus is a difficult word for him, but he really doesn't focus at all, from what I can tell, or anyone in his administration, on education reform. The Congress has backed off, and you've also seen kind of a reversal, a movement almost against, you know, reform and accountability, which is really troubling because, Jeannie, it's been this way since the beginning of time, in the beginning of the United States, and today. Without an excellent quality education, children from all walks of life, as you said, all stripes, have a difficult time being the person they were created to be, being fully employed, fully as creative as God intended them to be. And I don't know why this country just seems to think it's kind of not important if we have really good schools. Right. I mean, it really is important. And so we could talk all day about how to do it. But I am concerned that I'm not hearing enough from the Republican leadership, and very concerned about what I'm hearing from some of the Democratic leadership on stepping back from reform and excellence and progress.
And those substantive discussions that you have been a part of for so long as part of the progressive world of the Democratic Party that talk about, you know, even access to content, access to, again, different kinds of innovations. I remember, I know you won't remember this because there were millions of people come see you, even coming to talk to you about the DC Opportunity Scholarship Program, which was a hard thing for you to deal with as a Democrat, looking at how do you support DC private school choices. And you asked great questions. You were like, come back to me with answers to these questions. There were substantive discussions about that. You talked about, you know, George Bush, he had Teddy Kennedy, and Orrin Hatch work with all of them. I mean, there was this amazing synergy across the aisle, even when you fought lock, stock, and barrel about other things, there was some way to come together. So today, you actually reached out to kind of progressive Democrats in your Wall Street Journal piece, and you basically said, you can't turn your backs on this because this is fundamentally about equality and equity. What was the response to that?
I got no direct response from any of the candidates, and I'm not sure that I expected to, but what I wanted to express to them and to this whole country is that charter schools, which are public schools, independent, autonomous public schools, have from their beginning and continue to this day, whether they're in Minnesota, California, New Orleans, Baltimore, et cetera, continue to make great progress for kids that were left out of the traditional public school system. Kids that were in public schools for year after year after year, failing, not graduating, dropping out. Charter schools are innovative, autonomous schools that meet children where they are, and they'll do things like have 6 days of school or start early and go late, drop the sports and maybe add some more academics and music. They're not tied to these union contracts. But that's not to say they're anti-union. Right. They're just pro-child. They're looking at what's good for the student and teachers and faculty. But teachers and faculty come second, third, administration fourth. Children come first. What's wrong with that? I don't think anything. That's the way our school should be. So my urge to them was, charter schools are not magic, but don't shut the door on things that are working, particularly when charter schools are working to lift up and send to college and get through college Latino, African American kids, kids of with some special needs that were left out of the public school system. Don't close the door for them and open your minds to think about how other ways we can educate children who are from difficult and challenging backgrounds.
You know, and we were talking earlier, my listeners, I did not mention that Senator Landrieu, I'm so fortunate to have her here in studio with me. We were talking before the show started about Washington, D.C., and the correlation between the success that those options and opportunities brought about, that ability to create your own innovative school, drawing people back to communities, just like in New Orleans, where now you have 100% of your schools are charters and people are no longer fleeing to quote unquote suburbs. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that gentrification and where you see great schools bringing more success in cities.
Absolutely. I mean, you could just take out the census data. You don't have to read any opinion pieces or, you know, any facts skewed one way or another. Just look at the census data in this country. In cities or communities where there are good, vibrant public schools, people are flocking to those cities. Yes, people do travel to those cities for jobs, but families do not stay in those cities for jobs. Once they start having children, they leave and go to the suburbs and they commute in. So anytime you see an urban area growing, like in DC, you can rest assured it's because there are more options for good public schools. And charters have been an amazing contribution in the District of Columbia. Two Rivers comes to mind. There are other, you know, examples of excellent charter schools that are keeping young families, white families, black families, Hispanic families that would normally middle-class families move to the suburbs for free public schools, of which they perceive are better. They're not always, but the perception is they're better. Sometimes they're too big. Their kids aren't getting enough attention. That's another subject. But they flee to the suburbs. So as example, D.C. is growing. Part of it is because of options of excellent public schools. Many middle class families cannot afford $30,000 a year tuition, mm-hmm. or $40,000 a year tuition, or even $15,000 a year tuition, which is, you know, the going rate here in the city. So having good public schools where children can get access to quality education is so important. And the traditional public schools have failed in many, many, many places. Jeannie, not every place. But when you have public schools that function on property tax or taxes, so the rich areas, if you live in a rich suburb, then your kids, like in Houston, great, you know, Oaks neighborhood, Hundred Oaks, or forget exactly, it's a wealthy neighborhood in Houston. Well, those kids are getting educated at about probably $20,000 or $22,000 a year per child. You could go across the city to Houston, to a more Hispanic area or lower middle class area. Not that there aren't wealthy Hispanic areas, but you could picture a lower working class area. Those children are only getting educated at maybe $8,000 or $9,000 a year. The disparity is great. That's huge. The way our public school system is. Charters kind of equalize that in a way. Everybody gets basically the same. It's not based on district funding. Now, that's frightening to some people. Mm-hmm. But our kids are getting about, in New Orleans, $9,000 to $10,000 per year per kid, no matter where they go to public school. It's open access, lottery with sibling preference. We're trying to build a neighborhood, more neighborhood systems to get back to that, because people want to have that neighborhood school.
As a default, right?
As a default. But we want to have neighborhoods that are schools that are integrated, because you want diversification in your schools. It's really good for kids to grow up with kids like them and also different from them. It helps. So we struggle with that everywhere, because cities are sometimes still segregated, mm-hmm. even northern cities. Thank you so much. Yeah. Not just southern
exactly.
cities. So it's a struggle. But, you know, the bottom line is there are solutions, but both parties have backed up a bit, mm-hmm. which is concerning, because when you talk about solving middle class problems in America and meeting the middle class where they are, I don't know of anything more dear, more treasured by a middle class family than seeing that their children get a great education. And it drives me crazy not to hear too much coming from either side right. about that now.
Well, and, you know, this is very stunning that in a country where, for example, you have hillbilly elegy written about what happened in Ohio and Kentucky, J.D. Vance, rural communities mm-hmm. that are represented by people like Governor Bevin, a Republican mm-hmm. Kentucky, or Bill Lee in Tennessee, who were huge champions of educational choice, but both settled, in particular Governor Bevin, sadly, both settled for just pathetically weak charter school laws. Mm-hmm. You know, you follow this a bit in your role as a board member at the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this a lot across our organizations. There is just a stunning lack of understanding that if you're mm-hmm. going to actually create a law allowing parents to have options, allowing public schools to be innovative, you have mm-hmm. to create a real law. It's like you don't put a welcome mat on and then put a do not disturb over it. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're going to have three charter schools, or we're going to have charters and not fund them, mm-hmm. You know, or we're going to restrict the number of kids who go to charters. I mean, mm-hmm. the notion that we would restrict opportunity. So I wonder if, is part of the issue that people don't really understand how schools work, and they think just having a few options for kids is a good idea. Mm-hmm. Maybe we have to take all the politicians back to school about finance and bureaucracy mm-hmm. and really mm-hmm. what happens. I mean, what was your perception of that even as a senator?
Okay. Well, one thing that I would say is it's hard to talk about the nation as a whole. If you could break it down into, let's say, a third, and a third, and it's not difficult to do. Look at a third of the school districts in the country. They're probably excellent. And I'll give you an example. In our state, St. Bernard Parish, 13 schools run by Doris Vautier. She got literally the John F. Kennedy Hero of the Year Award. Amazing woman. She's on our Bessie board. She's a superintendent. She runs a public school system that is excellent. All of her schools, I believe, are A and B schools. So I would not recommend that a charter go into St. Bernard. Because if people wanted choices, they could go to Doris and say, look, we want more choice. She could probably figure out how to give them choice. If you went to another city, though, like New Orleans or Baton Rouge, where widespread failing of the public school system, you clearly could see that an innovative approach, charters, a mix of charters or all charters, could be helpful. Next point. In many rural communities, Jeannie, and this is true in Kentucky, Tennessee, Michigan, New York, any place, the school systems are the largest employer in the whole parish or the county. Mm-hmm. And so part of the problem is job security for the adults, not what's best for the kids. Now, there are some rural communities that have excellent schools. If you do, God bless you. Keep it up. Do your best. But if you're a rural community where people are fleeing and people are leaving because they don't have good schools, open your hearts to, you know what I'm saying, change right. and charters, and don't be afraid. And there are ways that you can accommodate the adult employment situation, you know, without sacrificing your children.
Right.
And that's part of the politics that people don't want to talk about, is these schools are major employers. And so when you start fooling with pensions or, you know, job security, you get pushback from the adults. I understand that. But we've got to focus on schools that work for our kids and building a stronger middle class for our nation. It's impossible to sustain a middle class or build a middle class without a vibrant, exciting public school system, of which charters are a part. So I don't know why people aren't talking about it. I guess there's so many other issues, and there are border, immigration, you know, international issues, budget, the climate, of course, is a big issue. But to me, this is like a centerpiece of democratic politics, is opportunity and equity. How we achieve that without an excellent seat for every child in every class, urban and rural and suburban, I don't know.
Well, and we've also been distracted by sort of the union-led Red for Ed strikes and this mm-hmm. notion that we can't possibly deal with kids until we deal with teacher pay. We all know teacher pay is uneven. How much of it has to do with the fact that we have these huge bureaucracies and these pension issues and the fact that, like, all teachers are paid as if they're chattel? You know, isn't there a case to be made that teacher pay could be in fact linked to more successful schools?
Absolutely. And we supported, and I say George Bush, President Obama, and Bill Clinton supported sort of merit pay for good teachers. Now, think about it. If you're in a school building with 100 teachers and everybody gets paid the same no matter what, no matter if you show up every day or not, no matter if you decorate your bulletin board or not, no matter if your kids are educated or not, you get the same pay as the guy or the gal next door that's breaking his back. How long do you want to work in a situation like that? Not very long. So, you know, rewarding good teachers, giving them bonuses, the TAP program, I don't know if you're familiar oh, yeah. with that, but it's proven to be so successful and that's kind of a master teacher program, so that young teachers don't feel overwhelmed, or first-time teachers, they get mentored correctly. You know, but most teachers don't go into teaching for pay, although they don't want to be paid, you know, well below there, but they go for the reward of it. And so if you're in a school that's kids are graduating, kids are learning, you're able to be creative and, you know, be the kind of teacher you want, as long as there's a minimum pay, I think that's what teachers want. But yeah, there's a tremendous amount of misunderstanding about charter schools. They're public schools. They're not private schools. Most of them are non-for-profit. Some of them, Jeannie, are for-profit. Maybe there's some questions that could be asked there. But most of them are trying to serve children that have been left out or underserved or literally abandoned by the public school system. And that's what we're trying to do in New Orleans, is educate every child. And it's, let me tell you, it's a challenge. I mean, we've made a lot of progress. We're proud, but we're not where we need to be. And we're working on it as fast and as hard as we can.
And what do you think about the other countries who seem to continue to beat us in science and math? And in fact, in sort of technology and innovation, there was a piece recently on CBS about artificial intelligence and the Chinese companies that are really looking at how well students learn under certain conditions, facial recognition, trying to match, you know, kids in rural areas that they deem left behind with expert teachers in a whole different part of the world. There are all these things swirling around, it seems. What's your thought about that versus how nimble and kind of advanced we are.
Yeah, I mean, the international statistics are pretty bleak. I mean, the U.S. continues, I think, to fall further and further behind. And again, I think it is a lack of focus from the national level, a real change in the last 20 years. We have to refocus at the national level. Governors need to refocus at their level and not be, it's hard to say because governors have big jobs, but not distracted by a lot of new shiny objects and stay focused. I know we have in Louisiana, Our governor is very pro-education, although he has not been very pro-charter school, but he has been more open-minded, as some of us have talked with him about it.
That's good.
But John White is one of our best superintendents in the nation, and I think the longest serving, which is another problem. The people don't stay that long enough in these jobs. I think John White's now been on for 6 or 8 years, longest serving in the country. Most don't last more than two. That's really sad. But anyway, we're making progress in Louisiana because we embrace charters for the most part. Throughout our state, we're building a strong charter sector, but we're also holding our school systems accountable in the rural areas, in the suburban areas. And we just had a great change in Jefferson Parish, which is the largest parish right side of Orleans, just elected a reform superintendent, a new reform board. So we're really excited about what could happen outside of Orleans Parish and Jefferson.
So many lessons from there.
So many lessons. So I want people to know that in Louisiana, we're just not a one-trick pony, like charter.
Right.
We are trying everything that will work to get children a good education and to give parents an excellent public school within their neighborhood they feel comfortable going. We believe that's a long-term economic development strategy, and we're committed to it. And we've been committed by Republican governors and Democratic governors. And so we're just going to keep doing it. And hopefully somebody running for president will kind of get back on the point.
Well, maybe there should be one of the debates in New Orleans, and they, as a requirement for coming in, should have to tour this.
Yes.
Right?
And now Cory Booker knows about this. Cory Booker's been an excellent advocate. Michael Bennett is terrific on this issue. You know, he's an amazing advocate and was a superintendent in Denver, as you know. So those two are kind of our leading Democratic presidential candidates. Amy Klobuchar has also been very outspoken in a good way on education reform. So I want to encourage those three to continue to speak out more, encourage Bernie Sanders to rethink his position, you know, encourage Elizabeth Warren to understand. Even Ted Kennedy understood the power, you know, of well-run public charter schools. And Ted Kennedy supported vouchers after Katrina so that children could get into school. It didn't matter if it was public or parochial or private. They were desperate. Their families were desperate. Even Ted Kennedy went against the Democratic Party to say, no, for 18 months, we're going to give these kids vouchers. They've got to get back into school. I mean, he was amazing. Because he had such a big heart and he had such a good mind that his ideology or his party ideology didn't ever stop him from doing what was right.
That's right. And Senator Warren herself actually acknowledged support for vouchers once upon a time and then completely went against when they were trying to lift the cap on charter schools in Massachusetts, completely went against everyone who was working to help those kids where it's largely an urban life-saving effort in Boston, Massachusetts. Stunning that they would do that.
And Jeannie, you know, I was and still am generally opposed to like widespread vouchers, which means taking all the money out of public schools, handing it out to parents and hope for the best. I've never supported that. But what I have supported is what we did in D.C. and what we do in Louisiana, actually, is using vouchers strategically when you're trying to transform a system, like in a parish or a county or a city, to say, okay, well, this is failing. So let's do a few charter schools. Let's give out a few vouchers to poor kids that don't have options. Let's build our really good public schools. Let's make them better. So kind of in a, you know, in a holistic approach,
you can use
what Jeb has done in Florida to some extent. So while I'm not just like some Republicans are, just give everybody a voucher and call it a day. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. But a combination of, like we said, holding, you know, folks accountable, good training and support for teachers, choice for families and kids, you know, and then good curriculum and sports, music, those kinds of things. So, you know, the music's playing again in New Orleans. People are excited, despite the fact that we're very close to going underwater. I mean, that's a whole nother subject. But at least when we rebuilt our schools, Jeannie, we rebuilt them higher, like they're actually like on piers,
literally
you
higher.
Know, literally like higher. Uh-huh. And so, you know, so we have hope that we can continue
to sustain, that.
Yeah, sustain them, a great school system.
You built them higher in a lot of ways. But it's funny, you're talking about choice. And, you know, a lot of our guests, and of course, we at the Center for Education Reform, big fans mm-hmm. of more educational options, more opportunity, call it whatever you want. But I wonder whether or not, you know, when the charter school movement started, it was actually in some ways guided by a reaction to a bunch of voucher initiatives. And I sometimes wonder if we don't need a huge universal push for vouchers just to reorient some of these folks to yeah. the need for balanced approaches. And again, I don't really care that much about balance personally. I don't have to run. I've seen lots of opportunities where kids mm-hmm. have benefited. I just think that everything should be on the table. But the fact that people are pulling back, as you said mm-hmm. in the earlier part of the show, that they, even Republicans and once progressive Democrats, are mm-hmm. running as if just because there's 10,000 people at the leadership of the National Union saying we don't like them or the NAACP, that they mm-hmm. have to run for the hills. Mm-hmm. It just seems like an insane overreach. So what do you tell them? What do we tell people mm-hmm. to either help change that in mm-hmm. both parties and nationally in the bipartisan way it once was? What do we have to be doing differently? Where have we failed as advocates to make the case?
Mm-hmm. That's a very good question. I think we sort of got rested on our laurels because we had so much support from President Bush and President Obama and President Clinton. And their appointees were so in line with what you and I have been discussing, kind of let's push, let's be open to some vouchers, some charters, you know, some innovative public schools, let's focus. We sort of rested on our laurels. But the second thing I would say is, it's not so much what I could tell someone, it's what they could see with their own eyes if they came. You know, there's a school in Georgia that's amazing, and I'm going to forget the name of it, but literally 600,000 people, as I recall, have been through to see it in the last several years. It's a teacher, public school that's just innovated. You know, when people go to see something like that, something that's working, it's a new model of public education. I'm not sure it's a charter, but it most certainly is not a traditional public mm-hmm. school. You know, they're an out of the box. The more, and we could take them to charters in New Orleans that have moved the graduation rates from 30% up to 67 or 70%. We could take them to the school that Sandra Bullock has helped to create. You know, she's adopted Warren Eastern, which is a 100% minority school. We hope it could be more diverse, but it is what it is. Yeah. But we have over a 90% graduation rate. And it's interesting because it's a predominantly older white board that saved this school. And even though the school is now, you know, majority African-American, it's really a beautiful story of people coming together like across racial lines to just fight for the greatness of that school. And then Sandra Bullock stepped in. She's been amazing. She comes to visit. Laura Bush has been to the school. And so now it's like Warren Eastern is one of the great success stories of post-New Orleans. And I could give you many examples. We have some military charters. We're starting maybe one of our first corporate charters in the region. And so New Orleans is really just committed. Our mayor, our city council, our school board, which is, you know, led by African-American, our superintendent is African-American. Patrick Dobar is our, you know, African-American superintendent of new schools for New Orleans. Tulane is involved. Everybody is leaning forward. And so we hope to continue to show good results, although our results have stagnated the last year or two. We're not discouraged. We're just going to find a way to push through.
It is amazing to hear you speak about this, and it's just another reminder of how much more we have to share these stories. Before the hurricane, mm-hmm. as I recall, New Orleans was last of all school districts
in the country.
In the country when it comes to achievement. And the rebuilding that you all have been able to do, mm-hmm. where people want to move there, and everything we've talked about today and more, is just stunning. And it's just an example of we don't have to just accept failure and poverty as an excuse for bad education.
Correct. And I will say, though, that with all due respect to what we're doing, we're trying to educate very poor children at $9,000 and $10,000 a year. I'm telling you, it is the hardest thing in the world. If we had $20,000 for some of our children, $25,000, you've got to have wraparound services. You just can't leave this all for one teacher in a class of 25 to figure out. So we have City Year is in. Mm-hmm. Communities and School is in. We have volunteers in our schools. I mean, we're wrapping as much health, social right. services, because it takes more. It's more than just learning the math. It's the feeding, the nurturing. We have gardens. You know, it's really like reinventing a whole public school system in the way that I think most people would be very happy to hear and see what we're doing. So we're going to continue doing it and spread this throughout Louisiana, maybe not all charters, but having a combination of innovative schools, pro charters, and some vouchers when appropriate, just making sure, keeping our eyes on giving every child an excellent choice that works for their family and for them.
Senator Mary Landrieu, I wish I didn't have to say you were former senator and you ended in 2015, because we need 10 of you in the United States Senate today and leading states when you are not crusading and continuing to support and advocate for kids. Her day job is at Van Ness Fellman as an energy and environmental expert, but I think that education is your calling, and I hope you will continue to be involved. Hopefully you'll come back and reality check. I'm grateful to you for being here today.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Jeannie.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Reality Check. You can subscribe to Reality Check at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn, and never miss an episode. Visit us online at edreform.com and follow CER on Twitter at edreform and me, Jeannie Allen. I look forward to exploring the world of education with you and another prominent guest next time. See you then.